for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, here with another hour of the finest from and the splendour of grassroots football. Joining me today, and I'm very pleased to welcome back to the show, Miss Non-League herself, Caroline Barker.
Is that finest or splendour or just grassroots for me?
Well, your roots look splendid.
They're a bit grassy, and
they're fine.
They're a bit strawy as opposed to grass.
You don't have grassy roots.
No. I don't know why that sounds as filthy as it does, but no, I don't want grassy roots, and I don't have them. We digress. How are you?
Dodgy legs, but you know that almost sums up my football career, really.
Well, you, me, and Dave Anderson both, because he's not here, because he's putting his dodgy legs to good use on the golf course, is he not?
Well, yeah, but it's sunny now. I would have thought they probably retired to the 19th hole.
Something like that. Yeah, exactly. The 19th hole is right. They even start. They even tee off. Hazen Yedding, United, which is always a delight coming to see you down here. How are fortunes favouring the brave?
Yeah, we're recording this on the Wednesday afternoon, which why it's sunny. It might not be sunny. It's supposed to be sunny all weekend, so it looks like a very nice weekend to watch some FA Cup football.
Welcome to the weather pod.
Yeah. Well, I've noticed my local weather are now doing the shipping forecast as well, which doesn't fit with local weather. But anyway, I digress.
I suddenly remember that you've moved. I was thinking, why are you getting central London for a shipping forecast?
The shipping forecast in Hayes is we've got the brook and the canal just over the weather.
Apologies.
Yes, so football-wise, I did watch Hayes and Yelling lose to Chesham United on Tuesday evening, conceding two late penalties and having a man sent off, and Chesham, I think, have gone top, so they're having a good season. I describe it as
diplomatic.
Tight margins.
Right.
Tight margins. We've lost games that we probably shouldn't have lost, and we did.
You should be a football manager. It's the apologist in you.
Yeah. I don't like the sound of my own voice.
Hosting his own podcast.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to the FA Cup this weekend, because it is a FA Cup second qualifying round, and
we need some joy. Exactly the same at Chelmsford at the moment. Our team swings from ridiculous to sublime after a triple substitution. We were at a family wedding at the weekend, and my dad snuck out to listen. But unfortunately, he could only listen during the photos. The photos he wasn't in. I mean, there probably is a shot. Actually, I did get a shot of him with the phone to his ear, listening to the commentary from Radio Clarets. But we were 2-0 down at that stage, I think. Then we got it back with 3-1 down, and then 3-3 equalised in the 90th minute. But what are we doing, bringing on three to equalise in the 90th minute? We can all be part-time managers, can't we? Just the players that come in, the chopping, the changing, it's not really working at the moment. But someone's going to get a walloping soon, possibly.
Soon, maybe.
It might be us.
we could all be part-time managers, but we haven't got time.
That's too true.
It's having a debate with a manager this way. I won't reveal who they were, but I think they should be sponsored by their mobile phone provider, put it that way, the number of calls that I think they've been making in the last week and taking. I'm not sure how many of them were successful.
But there's some real player movement, isn't there?
Another discussion we're having this week about loyalty.
Yeah, where's it gone?
It's the whole world, isn't it? It's interesting, we were discussing, because obviously, I suppose, your class as a Londonish club as well, around the
M25.
This seems to be, when now I'm out in the sticks and like talking to the guys from Yate Town who we played at Hazen Yedding on Saturday, who are sort of Bristol way, I think the further you go away from London, there does seem to be a greater sense of loyalty.
Mm.
And whether that's because there's not the competition from the number of clubs across the different steps, or whether it's just the way that they enjoy their football, there does seem to be that more community feel.
I was at Woking, we record this on Wednesday, I was at Woking on Tuesday night, gone there for a National League meeting, and I bumped into Martin Tyler, and also was just chatting to Alan Dowson, the manager there, and they had a game on against Millwall under-21s, just looking at a few players and seeing. But I think we have had maybe three friendlies this season. Still looking at players. They were obviously using last night as an opportunity to look at more players. And it's a churn, constant churn. And I just wonder, I'm not, in case you hadn't noticed, I'm not a football manager, but I wonder what that does to the balance of the team and not being able to get it right first off. And of course, we play on a Monday night. It's the old proverbial shop window, isn't it? You might get players leave you. You understand that, but the churn of players across the game is daft. At the moment, it's daft because you can't settle. And it'll be the teams that settle, as is an unspectacular league, but Wealdstone, where we've already been down to this season, teams that are settled and continue just to keep going, ticking over, the ones that will be there at the end, I would have thought. Anyway.
Interesting you say about the Monday night and the shop window. That's a debate that we've been having within our club about the video highlights that we provide. And we have for years now, SE Video provide stuff for us. And it's a constant, are we giving opposition an advantage because they can watch how our players play? So we've cut down our highlights down to 90 seconds now every week so that they can see us scoring goals. And if they want to, has it led to players being poached? I'm not sure. If a player's scoring goals, then someone's going to come and watch him anyway and make an approach.
Yeah. The meeting we had at Woking was about media and TV and moving embargoes and how that then works. But it's an interesting, it was great to have actually as many people as were able to come from the National League around, because we all know that it's volunteers that are doing half this job, that are filming games, doing the interviews afterwards. And it's that giving a little bit back to say, right, here's a little bit of leeway that the clubs can use the footage, and a little bit flipping the other way too, in trying to protect as a league, is there an asset there that you can sell to benefit all of the clubs. And they were interesting discussions that we had last night, and those discussions will continue. It's great that line of communication has opened up. But you're right, it'll benefit clubs, I would imagine, lower down. They all have access anyway, don't they? Each club gets two access codes to the footage that goes up. It's cheaper than sending a scout along to the game. You've then still got to have the time to be able to watch the game. You've got to go lowest common denominator, haven't you? And if a club can't afford to send a scout along to these games, then you're giving them your ability to look at them and to watch them. But you're right, the minute they start seeing loads of clean sheets or loads of goals being scored, then they're going to go and have a look at those players, because everyone's trying to find that next bargain and not have to fork out a fortune.
And I guess probably being the Monday night game, you normally have a row of scouts
They're always, the ambition is to try and get them to eat as many burgers and drink as many beers as possible. Otherwise, they are just taken up occupying the seat. But maybe they're just keeping it warm. It's collective warmth, isn't it? Because our gates have gone down. I know it's probably because all the Barkers weren't there at the weekend because we're all at this family wedding. But, you know, 650-odd. That's a worry on a Saturday.
That'd be nice on a Saturday.
I know. But I'm becoming my father. The potential of that club and how well they could do, and the Sleeping Giant, and when's Mark Haynes coming back? All these things that you do as a fan. But yeah, that's the one thing that would start to make me worry a little bit, is where are you injecting value back into a club? And I don't mean money back into a club, but what are you doing to create that experience that's going to get more people through the gate? And 650, 630, 650 is a worry for me. It's still early in the season. Still a bit of sun about, wasn't there, at the weekend, I believe, down here. I was up in Yorkshire. Don't know why I did that pathetic Yorkshire accent. So maybe that was one of it. Everyone going out enjoying the last days of summer. I don't know. I hope so.
Well, talking of potential and
investment. Don't mention potential at Billericay Town down the road. Is that what you were
segueing into? Yeah, after the many rumours and various texts that I've been receiving, it was confirmed on Monday that Harry Wheeler had left as manager again, and then everybody was waiting to hear who was going to be announced as manager, and Jamie O'Hara has been promoted to manager from assistant. And then on Wednesday morning, Billericay Town have announced that Glenn Tamplin has stepped down as owner of Billericay Town. So there's a little bit of debate as to how he can step down as an owner and which way that's going to go after almost 3 years in charge. So I'll read a bit of their statement. After long and lengthy discussions with close friends and family, I've decided now is the time for me to step aside from my role as both owner and director of Billericay Town FC. From day one, it was always my ambition to improve the infrastructure and community aspect of the club, and with very strong investment of my own personal money, I feel I leave the club in a good position to move forward and continue to build on the foundations I have laid and add further advancement under a new ownership. And the club have added, it has, Glenn continues, it hasn't been an easy decision and not one I've taken lightly, but I need to listen to advice from people close to me, and now is the appropriate time to move away. And the club have added, please be assured that the well-being and stability of the club is now our primary concern, and it's business as usual Saturday as the club continues to push forward. We'll be looking at organising a fans forum very soon, allowing the opportunity to keep the supporters up to date with the plans for the club moving forward, which is a little bit of a worry. Now, we're in touch with the club and we'll be following up in the coming weeks, but I mean, a lot of people have been suggesting maybe it isn't the end of the tampering era, because we've had this
been
before.
There, done that.
But it does sound like that could be it. And it also sounds like maybe the club are a little bit worried about where they are now and what they've been left with.
How many times off the back of you saw the statement on social media did you see someone reply with, announce tampering, announce tampering, announce tampering? Cry wolf, been there, seen it, done it, heard it before. Is it really the end of him walking out of the club this time? My big fear, and when our club, when Chelmsford went to the wall, when we lost our ground and we needed to ground share, we went to Billericay. The ground was in a poor old state in there, but the fans were in control. It was stable, but you know, looking for investment. We'd all heard, hadn't we? There was talk about whether he would go to Dagenham and Redbridge. There was talk about Glenn Tamplin when he came in, and he ends up at Billericay. If you look superficially at the ground, how he's improved the surface, how he's improved the stands, if you maybe whitewash some of the corridors and the dressing rooms, he'll have improved the corridors and dressing rooms, maybe get rid of some of those murals. He has brought attention to the club, not always wanted. But if he's walking away today, and the club are debt-free, and they've got the stadium, and they've got the ability to move forward debt-free, without any debt, and I keep repeating that, around their necks, and he's gone, and it's handed over to the club, and they're stable, brilliant. For the fans, I hope that's the case. More often than not, when we see owners walk away, you see what they've created in the stadium. Sometimes there's debt raised against the stadium. I'm not saying that's the case in this. I don't think that's the case in with Billericay. However, we're midway through the season. What are those players signed up to? What contracts are left with the club? Are they sustainable? Who's going to service those contracts? Were they on a week to week? Were they on 52 weeks a year? What have they signed up to? And who will make sure that those monies are paid? If he's walked away, if that's all sorted, then what a great position for the fans to be in. But they don't want to be coming back to a new love every week, do they? They don't want to go through all that heartache, that pain of saying goodbye to the lover, and then there's a knock on the door the next week again, and, oh, back, brought the dog with me this time. Whatever it is, it has to be a clean break, because you can't keep playing with people's hearts and emotions, which a football club is.
And I know we talk about, you know, football clubs have to be run as businesses. It is a business, and a business, you know, you don't work to a calendar of August to August, July to July.
Yeah.
But again, it just seems strange timing. You announce on Monday a new manager.
Are you surprised?
And then I'm not surprised. It was like one of those, what they called the things you used to make as a kid, where you'd move, fold a bit of paper and you'd have different...
Yeah, the origami paper, fortune.
It was like one of those over the weekend, with various bits coming in from fans, people connected to clubs and that sort of thing. You know, which one of these 10 permutations is it going to end up at? We're talking Wednesday afternoon. We think we got a solution. On Saturday, they got a big FA Cup game. Basildon at home. It could be a massive banana skin. You'd think that, you know, Jamie O'Hara's got enough experience behind him. He's got, I think, his A licence. He's on his way for his...
He's interesting. Listening to him on Talk Sport, he's got opinions and he's got a bit about him. it's just that worry. Who is it? The chairman now, is he picking up? Is Dan picking up the money tab? Where's that coming from? If he has truly gone, who then comes in behind? Is he? Because originally it was about he was selling the club. So has he not found a buyer? Has he just gifted it to someone? There's so many unknown quantities around this club that it just makes me twitchy. Interestingly, though, there's a National League board meeting on Thursday. So tomorrow's we record this. So I wonder if there's any. I've not heard anything yet. But, of course, any change in ownership, but anything that comes up, that needs to go before the board. So as far as I'm aware, nothing's come up yet.
Well, we'll keep probing and try and keep on top of the story.
Good luck.
So let's start with a big name manager looking to kickstart a big name club. We've followed the fortunes of Hereford FC since their Phoenix beginnings at the back end of 2014 and those first seasons of back-to-back titles. Then last season, a change of manager with the departure of Peter Beadle about this time of year. And eventually that saw Mark Richards appointed, but a disappointing finish in 17th and then a start to this season with only 4 points from 3 games. That saw him depart. The next appointment was crucial for a club with plenty of ambition and it didn't disappoint. Interim manager and head of football at the club, Tim Harris, announced Russell Slade, former manager at Scarborough, Yeovil, Leighton Orient and Grimsby and Mint, among many others. And as the new Hereford FC manager announced on the 29th of August, I'm pleased to welcome Russell Slade to the Non-League Football Show.
Good afternoon.
Welcome and thanks for joining us, Russell. I know you're darting between one appointment to another. You've not quite had 3 weeks in the job. But how does it feel to be back in the dugout?
Okay, well, it's always been a passion of mine. As the game, certainly managing and strategising and being on that touchline. There's nothing better than having that buzz of winning a football match, seeing your group of players enjoying a win. I think it's just, you know, it's become part of my life, a very important part of my life. It's been a big passion, and an awful lot of games. And I just enjoy strategising, preparing a team, and to try and win a football match.
But it's been 18 months since you left Grimsby. What have you been up to in that time?
A few things, really. I'm still involved in. I'm involved in a project which is really enjoyable. It's a VR project, technological project which we're working on with relation to football. So I've not come away from the game. I've just given myself a little bit of time this time because usually I've jumped straight back in.
Not virtual reality football managers, is it? I mean, we all hope that we're part-time managers from our living rooms, but that'll cause trouble.
Yeah, I suppose it will. But look, it is what I do. I enjoy it. I think I can bring something to the table for this team. There'll be, you know, all that experience that I can draw on from the past to try and move this football club forward. It is only 2 days a week in terms of the training, on a Tuesday and a Thursday, and then the big game on a Saturday. At some stage, I'm sure this football club, which has huge potential, has great crowds, will go full-time at some stage.
How difficult is it managing that expectation then of the crowds, because you'll know they were vocal in wanting a change and wanting a fresh face in.
Yeah, that I think that's the nature of football at a lot of levels now. Football clubs are wanting instant results, not always prepared to build something. But football fans they're not stupid. They do understand sometimes when they see with their own eyes that maybe the clubs have stood still or it's not progressing, and sometimes you have to make a change in order to get that progression. I get that. I've been replaced many times myself. Whether it's for the right reasons or the wrong reasons, whether it works or it doesn't work, sometimes it's going to happen, and you hope and everybody hopes that when you go into a football club, it's going to be a positive outcome.
A lot of it, though, is about expectation, managing that, communicating it as well. What is your expectation then for this season?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Communication is massive in most spheres of life. And I think when you go on a journey, you know, you've got to take your fans on that journey. you've got to take your players on that journey and manage those expectations as you go along. we want to progress, and you'd rather it that way. You'd rather expectation rather than, okay, if we stay up this year, that'll be success. And success can be judged in different ways. For some clubs, to stay in the league is success. For Clareford FC, success will be this season, success to a degree will be minimum being in the playoffs. And I get that.
So is that the target that you've been set? Because you look at the national offer. We spoke about this last year. National North was competitive last season. This season, even more so. You've got the big names at the top there. York City, Chester, Kingsland, Guiseley. And there's many more big names below. It's so competitive. But the playoffs, is that the target you've been set this season?
Well, that's where they feel this group of players could go. We played three games so far. We've been a little bit indifferent in the first two. Last night was probably our best performance to date. We hope to improve. We still need to improve further if we're going to get one of those slots, that's for sure. But that is something that we want to try and achieve this season.
Yeah, and you've brought in Andy Wing to assist. He played for you, I think, at Brighton and Orient. He's got some solid coaching experience as well at Oxford United, Kidderminster, Harriers and Coventry City. But what about specific non-league knowledge? Are you relying on Tim Harris for that, or have you got other people around you that can give that insight?
Yeah, I think that's the thing about being an experienced manager. You actually have the contacts and you know a lot of people. Tim knows people for sure at the level. I know a lot of people at the level. And Andy Wing will bring plenty to the table. So I think the combination of the three actually works very well. And providing we share that knowledge and we work towards what we want and identify what we want collectively, then that can be a successful team. As I say, it's about taking people on the journey, and your staff are very important, that you've got the right staff around you and the right network to support that success.
Financially, how important to what you're trying to achieve is a win in the FA Cup this weekend?
Oh, Caroline, I love a run in the FA Cup. I think it's great to have a run in the FA Cup, you know, because it can breed confidence and performance. Can sometimes give one or two players in the earlier rounds that have not played to have that opportunity to play and show themselves and then get in the team on a regular basis. And the cup, there's nothing like it. Anything can happen in the cup. I believe Hereford played the same team, Truro, last season and drew at home and then were 3-0 down away from home and won 4-3. That's the cup for you.
That's a stinker of a journey.
It's so unpredictable. That's, yeah.
You know, to be put against Truro, to have to make, I think there's a mug somewhere we've got at Chelmsford City that we all had made up for the 20 or so of us that made that journey to Truro. You don't want it for the replay. I know it's great if you win it, but that can maybe put some extra to miles in the legs and in the heart and things that will take it away from the league.
Yeah, totally. The focus, and will always be the focus, is the league and how we perform in that. And you don't want to be having too many replays where you're playing Saturday, Tuesday. We're playing catch-up at the minute because we had a couple of players out on international duty. So that was a catch-up game last night. So you don't want too many games, particularly, again, when your organisation, your team is part-time. You go into that and there are teams in our league now, as you well know, that are full-time and they will benefit from, you know, some of the part-time teams being inundated with games Tuesday, Saturday. Not easy.
And how did you come about ending up at Hereford? Have you been monitoring non-league? Obviously, you say you've still been in contact with the game and watching football and that sort of thing. Was it a target for you, maybe? A club like a sleeping giant? Although it's a reformed club, everybody knows the potential of Hereford, particularly with the FA Cup. So was it maybe a target club that you'd looked at before for maybe going for the management job?
Yeah, well, I don't know whether you know, but I'm obviously, when I moved to Cardiff City, we are still based here as a family. So geographically, I live, you know, approximately an hour away from the football club. So that works. I'm not having to travel, you know, 3 or 4 hours to a football club, because I don't think that's beneficial. So that is useful as well. And the fact that, yes, I mean, the football club has got great tradition. It is potentially a league club. We all know that. It's on a journey at this moment in time since it's been reformed. It's had a few promotions in the lower leagues, and now, you know, it needs to reshape again and push on again, and it has that capacity to do that, and, you know, that's always going to be appealing.
You think it's a football league club?
Yes, I do. Yeah, potentially, of course, yes. I mean, there was just under 2,000 last night. I think on a Saturday, gates have been round about 2,500 average, so... Yeah, I mean, that's terrific support, really. You know, so there'll be some teams in League Two would be, you know, happy with that on a regular basis.
And you obviously mentioned, you know, Cardiff and your time in the Championship. How do you approach coming back into non-league and National North, and you're up against, you know, various clubs that are full-time and part-time clubs? Do you have to manage in a different way?
Well, I think the key word is you've got to be adaptable. Mm. Obviously, I've worked in the National League before with Scarborough, as you mentioned earlier, as one of my clubs, albeit a good few years ago. I think you need, when you go into a football club, I think you need to look at the football club. It's all well and good wanting to put your own identity on it and start to run it how you want it to run. But I think you've got to appreciate the club as well and look at what it does have to offer and what needs maybe tweaking or changing slightly if you're going to move it forward. Because you don't always have to change everything. There may be some very good things that are already operating at the football club. They just need changing slightly. And I think when you're an experienced manager, you see that fairly quickly.
Yeah, and every day's a learning day, isn't it? Russell, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football
Show.
Good
luck, Russell.
Wish you well in the league, and particularly wish you well at the weekend in the FA Cup.
Thank you.
Take care. Go carefully. There'll always be quality in a manager, whatever level you go to. And very much as we were celebrating Danny Cowley and Nicky Cowley getting that other move, another move again from Lincoln, having come up and through from non-league. If you approach the football clubs in the same way, the different facets of it, speaking to different people, then those processes should work, right? Mm-hmm. Tim Harris, who we've spoken to many times, the knowledge that he has, Addy Wing, as you were saying, and his having been at Scarborough, having seen the big club mentality perhaps lower down.
Yeah, and the thing I know about Russell from talking to players, coaches, people that have worked alongside him, his man management skills are his greatest asset. And if you can get people to work for you, then that's the first step to success. Because, I mean, how often have we discussed about people that are in it for themselves?
I'd run through a brick wall for you, Tim. Just not right now.
Yeah, not these ones.
No.
I don't need the stand falling down. Thank you very
Condemn
much.
Condemn it.
But, as I open with, you know, I think it's a fantastic appointment. And if he can get it right and manage the expectations of the fans. Yeah. And that's not because their expectations are outlandish. They've had three back-to-back titles. So you get on that snowball, don't you? And then suddenly last season, 17th, it's sort of... And then... do you still want to go on a cold...
What would 16th sound like? 15th? Depends.
It depends.
Playoffs go all the way down to 23rd.
Who knows? Who knows? But we'll it'll be an interesting a cup tie, certainly that one.
Talking of interesting, can we talk about FA Cup stats next?
We can talk about FA Cup stats, but I think I might need to bring somebody in.
Go on then.
And so we do reach the FA Cup second qualifying round. 116 clubs from steps 3 to 5 have won their way through to this round, and they're joined by the 44 National League North and South clubs. Plenty of stats, facts and number crunching, so who better to talk to than our very own FA Cup Stato. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show at FA Cup Fact Bar, Mr. Phil Annette.
Hi, Tim. Hi, Caroline.
Woohoo! Sorry, we were just talking about what noises for different positions that you finish in the league. And that covers maybe from seventh up, I'd say, Tim. A woohoo. Oh. Phil Winnett's woohoo covers from seventh up.
Well, I mean, where... What sound were people making that last round? We'll start with that last round. There were a few cup sets.
I did.
It's just easier. It's modern. It's down with the kids.
Oh, you are nothing if not.
Yeah. Sutton Coldfield Town, I know that they were one that they beat Redditch in a replay. They've got a big game up at National League North Kettering Town in the next round. United County's premier side, Deeping Rangers, they knocked out a team from a tier above AFC Sudbury. Was it anything out of the ordinary last round then, Phil?
I don't think there was anything extraordinary in terms of cup sets. There were quite a few. I think there's more to do with the fact we've got a few teams who are through to this round for the first time. So that's quite exciting.
Yeah, very exciting.
Who excites you most? Me or Tim? No.
You can't ask me that question. It lies in the Well, we've got Abbey Rangers, who I actually saw in their very first FA Cup game up at Tame United a few years ago. So they went 3 years without winning a game and are now into the second qualifying round this year. And they take on Walthamstow. So that's a two-step five clubs who are guaranteed to be into the next round, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting because we haven't got anybody below step five in this round. But it is good to know that we've got guaranteed one through to that third qualifying round.
Yes, yeah, it's fantastic. No step six, unfortunately. But that's not surprising, given there are fewer step six clubs taking part. And with the pyramid restructure, obviously more clubs are playing at a higher level than they may have been last year. Because of the extra promotions, etc. So it's going to get harder and harder for Step 6 clubs to get this far until they open the gates up for more Step 6 clubs to take part.
Yeah, it is all about the magic of the FA Cup, but there is that extra gloss. And even in league games this season, this is the thing that everybody's been talking about when I've met with them. It's that enhanced prize money this season. Mm. This round we've got 6,750 for the winners and 2,250 for the losers. And the losers in the next round, they get 3,750. So winning this weekend means that it's worth more than £10,000 just for winning one game. I mean, that's hopefully clubs haven't budgeted for that, but it's a game changer for your season.
Well, it can definitely. I mean, some of the step two clubs, they'll be grateful for that money, but the step five clubs, it will be massive. Injection of cash into their funds. And there's quite a lot of step five clubs there, who 14 of them, who will be looking to hope to get hold of that 10 grand, if not more.
And it's like we stressed before, it's the money for losing as well, which everyone loves a loser. But if you can actually budget that into it, which clearly you can if you're losing too, it makes such a huge difference. Have you done anything, I don't know, on the attendances, Phil, or the sort of the buzz, the noise around the FA Cup? Clearly with the BBC getting involved and continuing to stream a game every round. I just wonder whether you feel like there is more attention, whether you're seeing more attention to it as well.
Well, I think there is more attention per se. I mean, I'm very close to it, so I hear the noise all the time.
Mm.
So everywhere I go, everyone who knows me will talk to me about the FA Cup. But even when you look at the chatter on Twitter and other forums, you see that the FA Cup is the one that everyone wants to talk about. That's the one they want to be involved with, and that's the one they want to play their best in. So, yeah, I think it's getting high profile. The BBC's coverage is fantastic, and they've got a wonderful game to cover on Saturday with Earlham, who have never gone further in this round, against York City, who are former semi-finalists. So you couldn't get a more FA Cup pedigree than those two teams.
Yeah, and is it just a quirk? Because in recent rounds, we've had lots of Friday night games, but because this one kicks off at 12:30 on Saturday, I think it's the first game of the round.
It is, yeah. It is, yeah. I think it's not uncommon to find ground sharing, etc., to cause the odd Friday night game. There are a few games on Sunday for that reason as well. But as we get through the qualifying rounds, I know that the FA themselves aren't keen for games not to happen on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Do you talk to the FA a lot about this? And if
I wish I could get a conversation with
them. Well, there you
wish.
Go.
No, I don't know why.
But I wonder that.
They don't ignore you.
I wonder. I'm sure they're not ignoring you. I'm sure they're not. But if they were listening, and we used to say about, God rest his soul, Tony Kempster, and the work he used to do, particularly on the reorganisation of the leagues. For those listening that don't know Tony. He was one of those that really was a bedrock of non-league football and was important in the organisation, but it was the stats, the knowledge, the breadth of knowledge that he had, which was instrumental in various things that changed where teams were put in the leagues. And I just wonder, Phil, if the FA... Sorry, I should say, when the FA listens to this, what you would say to them about changes that you would like to make, what you're happy with, what you're not happy with the FA Cup?
Well, I mean, I've got a list as long as your arm, if I'm being honest. But if I look at it from a non-league perspective, I've already written several times before about how they need to try to accommodate more non-league clubs into the competition and open up the opportunity to get more non-league clubs into the proper rounds.
But what if that dilutes it? What if that, you know, the pot isn't huge, they've increased it, but would you have more in and running the risk of maybe less money each round?
Well, I think they can. That's another issue about how they distribute the money, because it doesn't matter what they do at the top end in terms of prize money. The clubs who are likely to win the FA Cup, that prize money is going to be pocket money only, whatever they do with it. So they can afford to spread some of that out further down, and as a consequence, maybe involve more clubs and give bigger prize money per round. I know there's a clamour for more money to go into the FA Vars as well and that kind of thing. I'm sure they could do something there too. But I think we should. There's been an expansion of non-league clubs' entries since the year 2000. I think that's great news that they've allowed that to happen. But what hasn't changed is still only 32 make it into the first round proper. So we've gone from 400 clubs to 600 clubs or 600 plus clubs, and we haven't opened up any more positions in the proper round of the competition. So I think there's definitely an opportunity there to do it, because we know this is where the excitement of the competition really starts.
And obviously, we love you for your stats and facts, Phil. And now I did spot one about Chasetown on your preview, but I'll leave that one to you. Do you want to tell the listeners about that one?
Me, tell
well,
me.
I have normal stats and I have Caroline Barker stats.
Thank you. Let me see if this will reach the Caroline Barker seal of approval. Do continue.
Well, the Chasetown stat is one that they're on their 99th FA Cup match. Hopefully, they hope to get to 100 this year, but it'll be up against it against Leamington. And the big thing there is that in their 99th match, they're finally playing a team that begins with the letter L.
I mean, so how? How do you know these things? I mean, clearly, you did a reason, but how?
I can't give away any trade secrets, you know that.
Well, I love you for it. And yes, that gives a big old...
And of course, your own team, Chelmsford City, got a nice little alliterative tie there against Corinthian
Casuals, yeah. And a good old-fashioned non-league team. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, it should be actually a very good
game.
There's
my preview. I'm looking forward to it.
That's all you need.
Yeah, well, we've not had a lot to look forward to. And we've had exciting games this season, just maybe not as many points as we would have liked. So actually, it's a bit of a joy in the FA Cup. Who have you got, Tim? Hayes and Yedding, you're away, aren't you?
A nice draw on paper away at Badshot Lea, the combined counties premier.
Football's not played on paper, Tim. Yeah,
indeed. It's got banana skin written in the programme notes. But I think, you know, again, discussing the prize money that's available, if you have a winnable tie, that's got to be the way forward. And I know, speaking to some other managers, you know, a home draw might have been nice. But yeah, speaking selfishly, there's more to do on a home tie, so it's nice to go and watch the sunshine. Particularly if it's going to be sunny this weekend. What a way to enjoy FA Cup football.
Where are you enjoying it, Phil?
Saturday will be sunny. Sunday won't be, apparently. So.
All right, doom and gloom merchant. Where are you going on Saturday then?
Well, Saturday I'm off to Portland United v Salisbury. I think that's got an exciting potential for a cup set, but also historic outcome, whatever happens. Salisbury, bizarrely, had never been beyond the second qualifying round since they reformed. And Portland United haven't been beyond this round in my lifetime. So it will be quite a good... Hopefully we'll get a result that day.
So Portland is still a young club as well then?
Of course, yeah. Only been going a few years.
Enjoy.
But then on Sunday, I'm now going off to watch Biggleswade take on Chertsey Town. And so that will be a different kind of clothing required, because I think the heavens are going to be open Sunday.
Did you mention Chertsey? Somewhere on a golf course, someone is mentioning something about the FA Vars, but they'd have to be here.
The club are bringing the Vars with them to the match to share with everyone there. So yeah. I'll get to see it myself.
Hang on to the glory while they can. Don't drink from it because we all know where it's been.
Phil, remind people where they can follow all your FA Cup insight and read more about those amazing stats.
Okay, well, you can follow me on Twitter at FA Cup Fact File. I run a blog on WordPress, FA Cup Fact File, WordPress.com. And I do use Facebook, again, FA Cup Fact File. Yeah, do follow me on all those platforms.
And on Saturday night, he's there with stats already. He's got them geared up, waiting.
I do. I'm not sure how soon after the game, after the Portland game, I'll get onto them because it's quite a long trip for me to get back. So it might have to wait till Sunday morning.
Well, and if it's a nice evening, a tip from someone that lives a bit local, watch the sunset at Portland. It's awesome.
Okay, good tip. I might just do that.
We had weather early on, and now we're giving tips for sunset.
I could probably put my shipping forecast into that bit by Portland.
Don't.
Yeah. Phil, thank you for joining us as ever. We'll see if we can get that meeting set up with the FA, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
Take care, Phil.
Thanks a lot, guys. Speak to you soon.
It's not just for me he provides those stats. It's the ones that if you had... Can we do Christmas crackers, non-league Christmas crackers? We should do non-league Christmas crackers and put Phil's stats in it. I mean, I know at least one person that would buy those crackers. No one else.
I can see the merchandising arm branching.
I said crackers. There was no P in there.
Yeah. Please do look at Phil's stats and facts. I haven't given them all away on this show, so it gives you a chance to go and hunt them down and just wow your friends or family or just wow yourself. Now, we love a bit of good news here on the Non-League Football Show. So when a statement went out yesterday from Clapton Community Football Club about a new lease on the old Spotted Dog ground, we knew we had to cover it this week. Hopefully the man that can tell us more is on the line. So welcome to the show, Kevin Blow, Treasurer at Clapton CFC.
Hello.
Well, thanks for joining us, Kevin. I guess we should, for those that don't know, we should start with a very quick history lesson, and it will be a very quick history lesson. I'm sure I'll miss bits out and it'll be controversial, but I'm trying not to make it controversial. Clapton FC history goes back nearly 150 years, a wealth of international famous names from bygone eras, including Walter Tull. And then back in 2012, as we featured on this show back in the BBC days, there was something of a fan revival. There was increased community engagement with supporter groups like the Clapton Ultras. That saw home game attendances rise from sort of the average of 25 or two men and their dogs to the high hundreds in just a few years. But then there was a fallout, there was ill feeling between the owners and the fans, and whilst Clapton FC still exists and plays in the Essex Senior League, with the help of Supporters Direct, Clapton Community Football Club was voted into existence by a new set of members in February 2018. And well, you won the Middlesex County Division 1 in your first season last, and then this season you're in the Premier Division, which is Step 7. You're ground sharing with Waltham Stowe at Wadham Lodge. You've competed in the FA Vars for the first time this season, and now you've got your sights set on a return to the old Spotted Dog. That's a brief history. Did I get it right?
Yeah, it's been a busy year, I think that's fair to say. I mean, the issue with the grounds is actually central to the reason why the club was set up in the first place, Clapton Community Football Club, because, you know, we'd stuck with the club that played at the old Spotted Dog ground, despite the fact that it was quite clear that the people in charge really didn't want us there. But it was the decision to put the ground into liquidation in April 2017, which kind of was really the turning point, I guess, because at that stage we really genuinely thought that all that history that you've spoken about, going back to the first game back in 1887, was going to disappear, and we didn't know what was going to happen, but we knew that we couldn't just carry on as though, you know, nothing was happening. So from April up until the end of 2017, fans were refusing to go into the games. We were quite often watching the games over the fence. But in the last part of that year, we spoke to Supporters Direct, and who said to us, look, you say that you're the real club. You carry with you the weight of history. And that's true. I mean, we do. We have, when we decided to take their advice and move on and set up our own club, what we consider to be the real Clapton, we took with us, you know, past presidents, past secretaries, member of our board, Martin Silver, saw his first game in the 1940s. John, who's one of our life members, has the medals from his father from the Senior Cup from before the First World War. So, I mean, it's like we felt it was a continuation. And it was about the ground. It was about that concerns about the ground. So fast forward to about a month ago, we had a really successful year. We thought, well, you know, we still don't know what's happening with the ground. So the liquidation had actually been challenged at the time. An injunction was obtained, but it's just rattled on through the courts ever since while we wait to try and find out what's happening. And then all of a sudden, the games that are taking place at the Old Spotted Dog are not happening, the pre-season friendlies. And we subsequently discover that the people that have been controlling the ground hadn't been paying the rent to the freeholder. Apparently, subsequently discovered that the freeholder had been trying to get hold of them for 2 years and nobody's returning their calls, and that they'd taken the decision to basically to repossess. So that's where we were. And what we did subsequently is we put in a proposal to Heineken, who are the freeholder, didn't really think too much about what anybody else might be doing. We had a business plan, you know, properly all sort set out exactly what it is we were going to do, how we were going to do it. Got lots of support from within the local area. So local MP Lynn Brown, the mayor of Newham, Roxana Fires, both of them were supportive of our bid, and then we waited. And then yesterday, we got the momentous news that we've been accepted as the prospective freeholder, so which is fantastic.
Well, in days of that long history, it was a very concise history, and please do go and look at the Clapton CFC website for more information on history. And if you're a non-league fan, you know about the Old Spotted Dog ground anyway, but it was quite a momentous day yesterday. It was almost like in the film Star Wars, where they did you feel the Force? So there were ripples across social media, message boards and everything about you being offered a new lease there.
I mean, it's the level of goodwill was just absolutely fantastic, and I think it's a testament to the fact that the club has really worked hard, not just in terms of building support locally. I mean, I live around the corner from the Old Spotted Dog in Forest Gate, so you know it was a really big deal for me. I was the one who was leading on the negotiations with Heineken, and I knew before everybody else. I wasn't allowed to say anything until the press release had gone out, which was incredibly frustrating, as I'm sure you can imagine. But also just the support that had come from other teams and people that have involved in other clubs, not just in this country, but, you know, from Canada and from the United States and from Germany and Spain and France. I mean, it was just amazing. It was an absolutely amazing day yesterday.
That's got a lot of it down to your kit, doesn't it? And the fact that you've sold that around the world, which was a masterstroke. It's the flag, isn't it? Based on the flag of the Second Spanish Republic.
That's right. I mean, that has been a really important part of the club, having the kind of financial stability that we have. And as treasurer, that's something that's my responsibility. Mm. But it's in order for us to be able to put in a really convincing, carefully thought out bid to Heineken. I mean, that's been absolutely essential. When we started down that road, when we had a design for a shirt, I think we probably ended up expecting that we might sell 250. And we sold just under 13,000 of them.
Gosh.
And it, you know, and a lot of those have been from Spain, because it was based as a tribute to people from this country, actually. Mm. Been over to Spain in 1936 to fight against fascism, and it was something that we felt was not only important because a lot of them came from East London, but also I think reflected the values that we wanted to articulate. I mean, the whole business of standing up against racists and bullies is a key part of who we are, I think,
and should be for every club. What, you know, you can never say never, but when you look to the future now, what will safeguard this club? What will stop it ever having those problems about the ground again?
Well, I think the crucial thing is that so much of football at every level, but and this is just as true as at non-league level as it is in the Championship and the Premier League, is that everybody depends on rich white knights to come in and save their clubs.
Mm.
And we have just under 1,400 members. And our constitution has been written, has been thought through so that it's impossible for somebody to come in and take it over. Unless they were able to convince 1,400 people to do that. But we are a community benefit society. It's a kind of a form of cooperative. The decision-making that we have is made by our members. You know, lots of the individual day-to-day stuff like, you know, match day and fundraising and finance and so on is organised by committees. But a lot of decisions are made by online polls. And it's a really different way of involving people. So lots of clubs say that they struggle with having not enough volunteers and there's four or five people doing stuff. We have 70, 80 people that are regularly involved in some way in different aspects of the club. That's the way we want to sort of hope to maintain the momentum and make sure the club survives. It's not just about the fact we've had some good fortune with money this year, but it's also about just people staying involved.
Absolutely.
And obviously, you've got this the nod from the brewery on the lease side of things, but that's only the first piece of the jigsaw. I guess you've still got signed contracts and that sort of thing. What's the timescales for you to even get back to playing some football at the Old Spotted Dog?
Well, you're quite right. I mean, there is still further discussions to happen that need to happen with the brewery to finalise the eventual lease. And you know, part of that is going to be looking at what it is that we're actually taking over, because the ground was in a pretty sorry state of repair when we all walked away back into the end of 2017. And as a local resident, I know that it's not got any better.
No.
We don't know what is going to happen with also with an ongoing legal case involving part of the ground, which is actually quite important to the future, this future development. That's still going through the courts and we're still waiting for a court date on that. On top of that, there's fundraising that needs to be done. I mean, we're talking about London's oldest senior grounds in desperate need of being regenerated and revived. So there's grants to be applied for and so on and so forth. So I think realistically, with all of that, and because we've got a commitment to stay playing up at Wadham Lodge in the ground share with Waltham Forest until the end of the season, I think what we want to do is to do things properly and get back in there for the summer next year.
But
in the meantime, it doesn't mean that we can't play on the ground. There will be things happening. It's just that I think the return of proper organised senior football will take that long.
And if people want to get involved or show their support, how can they do that?
Buy a shirt if they can find one now.
Well, the shirts are still available at games, although basically we had to stop selling them online because, well, we were having to administer oxygen to our volunteers. So crazy. So we may put some more back online at some point. I mean, the main thing is that, as with all things, just come to the games. Mm. I mean, we have both a men's first team and a women's first team now. Is that women's first team are playing in the Women's FA Cup on Sunday. I imagine that's going to be a bit of a celebration, since it's back up in Walthamstow for a lot of people. And then we encourage people to just become a member. It's a minimum of fiver, and then get involved in the committees and structures that we've got. And there are people who are not just sort of local, but people who are all over the world. We have an international committee now, and we have people in New York and in Seoul and in all kinds of places who do this stuff online. The world's changed. You can do that sort of thing now.
So get behind Clapton CFC and hopefully get behind seeing some football at the Old Spotted Dog ground again. Kevin, thanks for joining us. Congratulations. And keep that smile going, because I'd imagine people might have guessed by the smile that you already had some good news earlier on in the week. But
I think that's a fair guess, yeah.
please keep us updated, and we look forward to speaking to you soon.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much.
Take care. Well done, Kevin.
And a good story. And
don't we all want that for our club, don't we? And sustainable, yeah. A home that's protected. All of the above. All of the above.
Yeah. It sounds smooth on paper, but as Kevin indicated, there's a few more hurdles to leap. And
look at
other
you
people
sat here at Hazen.
I took someone for a walk around the ground this morning that's not been here. And I was explaining, I've got pictures, videos of times when this was just a couple of bricks in the ground, and it didn't look like we were ever, it were the winds of change have moved along and got some bits built, but we're still...
You have to move forward, right? You have to move forward, but it does, I mean, it pees me right off sometimes, particularly at Chelmsford, when people moan about, yeah, it's rotten that we've got an athletics track around the ground. It is rotten, proper rotten, but we're playing in Chelmsford. And at the moment, it's a council... I say at the moment, it's a council-owned facility, which is far more secure than sitting in anyone else's hands. The club is not in the hands of the fans anymore. Well, it is for the moment because the ownership hasn't gone through. But that's... it's an asset. It's a community asset. You've got to look after it. You've got to do whatever you can to make sure that sits with the club and with the people of that community.
So let's round off the show and head on over to Non-League Paper Towers as ever. Welcome back to the Non-League Show. The senior writer at the Non-League Paper, Mr. David Richardson. Welcome, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm looking forward to another bumper weekend of non-league football. We've obviously got loads of FA Cup action this weekend, but also some big games in the national leagues. And it's interesting to see that, you know, perhaps two of the less fancy clubs are up there setting the pace at the top with Woken and Bromley. Now, both managers there, I mean, we've known for years, and we know how good they are. But they do seem to have surprised a few people that they're still up there. And it's quite a few games gone now in the National League.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, two real surprises, Woking and perhaps to a lesser extent, Bromley. I think they did sign well over the summer. But even so, they probably weren't obviously the obvious choice to be up there at this stage of the campaign. But Alan Dowson at Woking has done a fantastic job. There, I think with Chorley, they're the only part-time side in the division. So naturally, the budget won't be very big there either. Of course, they came up from National League South last season too. So, you know, an absolutely remarkable start, and full credit to Alan Dowson and the team he's got there. He's always built teams that are very together and know how to win, maybe perhaps by the odd goal or cling on to games and sort of dig in, and I think very much the batting qualities are there again this season. You know, I think they've drawn their last three, but they've been unlucky in some of those to have not won them. And then again, Bromley, you know, a side that's slowly but surely established themselves at the level. They've made improvements to their ground. They've moved full time. They have better training facilities now as well. Of course, they play on 3G pitch as well, which helps the club. But no, I think Neil Smith again is doing a great job there. Like I said, he recruited very well in the summer, I think, and it did sort of turn heads to think that there'd be that dark horse, and they're very much backed up that name in the first month or so now.
Yeah, and it's nice. We've spoken to Russell Slade this week, obviously at Hereford, who's got a league pedigree as well as a non-league pedigree. We spoke to Neil Ardley a few weeks back, who's come out with the league and into non-league. But it's nice that we've got two managers that are proper made in non-league, aren't they? In Alan Dowson and Neil Smith there, that are the ones that everybody else is looking at. That and maybe, as you said, you know, Woking operating on a part-time basis. You know, Neil's obviously got a slightly increased budget this year and other facilities and that sort of thing, but obviously not as much as some of the others they're competing with. And it does show how important man management is at football at any level, but particularly at non-league.
Yes, absolutely. So how Alan Dowson and Neil Smith have both come up through non-league or sort of learnt their trade in non-league. And I think the obvious example at the moment is the Cowleys, of course, went to Huddersfield last week following incredible success at Lincoln, who they obviously took from the National League up into League One via a trophy at Wembley and the FA Cup quarterfinals. And of course, before that, they had a very successful year at Braintree in the National League, getting them into the playoffs. It was also part-time And then obviously before that at Concord, where they really did effectively start at the bottom in the Essex Senior League and taking them all the way up to Step Two. And yeah, and it's similar to Alan Dalton, what he's done. He's won a promotion at every club he's been at. I think that was his fourth last season at Woking, getting them through the playoffs. And this is now the highest level that he's managed at, and it's great to see him completely taking that on and doing well. And the same for Neil Smith, who has after his playing career turned his hand to management and coaching, and now with Bromley, he's really building something there, and that very much is a club heading in the right direction, like I said, with the ground improvements as well.
Yeah, so if you get it right as a manager in non-league, it can be fantastic. Mm. Being a manager, though, isn't always a bed of roses, is it? So this week, we've already discussed about the situation at Billericay, which has moved on, and by the time everybody listens to this, it may have moved on again. But we think Glenn Tamplin standing down. It already sacked Harry Wheeler this week, or Harry's left for a second time. And then you look around, there's other changes as well as managers. You've got Dean Barker has stepped down at Kings Langley in the last few days. Nick Davis has gone at Ramsgate. And Martin Call at Basingstoke.
Yes, it seems to be getting to that time of the season now where clubs or managers themselves are looking at how things are going. You know, we've mentioned already this season the number of games that have been played, and obviously now you've got an opportunity to assess how things have been going. You've mentioned a handful of managers there who have left for differing reasons. You know, I saw Dean Barker's statement about Kings last night where he said, you know, he perhaps didn't have full sort of control over things there. I think he went in wanting to, you know, be able to manage without restraint and interference. And I think, you know, he hasn't been able to have that, which is a big shame, obviously. Martin Call at Basingstoke, the club, as we've talked about in the past, has issues with the ground. Of course, they're not playing at the usual ground where they've always played, and as a result of that, the budget for that Step Four, which is I think their lowest ebb for a number of years, and I think they're winless in their first six as well. And Martin Call is vastly experienced, of course. You know, he was at Aldershot and had a good playing career as well. It's difficult, and I think over the next few weeks we'll probably see more of it, such as the way football is nowadays.
Yeah, and I guess your day to day job is speaking to different managers, and have we got to that stage? You say we a lot of clubs have played more games than they normally would have done at this time of season. Well, it certainly feels that way anyway. Are we getting to that stage where, you know, managers are looking over their shoulder and they're beginning to pay more attention to the tables, even though they'll tell you they're not? And it's a tough time for managers, because it's got to the stage where players are fairly settled at their clubs, or, you know, if they're discarded, then there may be a reason that you know, maybe they've got a slight niggle or an injury or something like that. But we're coming up to Christmas, when you know that clubs are going to need slightly bigger squads because availabilities, if you get injuries, extra games and that sort of thing. Have you sensed extra stress amongst managers in recent weeks?
I'm not sure. I think you touched on it there, really, about sort of you. I think maybe managers look at it and if you don't win for five games, suddenly there might be more pressure on you somehow, or, you know, fans start, you know, things aren't as rosy 4 weeks ago as they were now. There is that element to it. I think management nowadays is a knife edge, really, and such as the full margins of whether you win games or not can have a massive say in whether you have a job at the end of the month. So it is difficult for managers. I perhaps wouldn't say I've sort of experienced managers this season sort of feeling the strain of things, but you know, you look at sort of maybe John Sheridan at Chesterfield having, you know, gone 10 games without a win during this season, which, you know, no one would have predicted at the start of the season. They were very much fancied to be up there. Of course, they did finally get their win last week. But, you know, it just goes to show you can be very quickly on the brink of things if suddenly things start going badly.
Yeah, it's a tough world. It's an exciting world, and it keeps us entertained for sure. What else can we expect to read about in the non-league paper then this weekend, David?
Well, Notts County have an interesting scheme next Saturday. They're slashing their ticket prices to £3 for adults, £2 for concessions, and £1 for under-18s. Really, as a mark to say thank you to the Nottingham community for their help over the summer. Of course, well documented what happened over the summer with players and staff not being paid, etc. And I've been speaking to the club there really about, you know, what sort of happened over the summer and also now moving forward under the new ownership. So it should be a great day next Saturday when that happens. I think there's a very strong possibility that they'll set a new conference record for the largest crowd there. So I've been finding out a little bit more about that scheme and how things are going now at the club. We've also got plenty of FA Cup action this Sunday. I believe we're covering every tie in the competition from the second qualifying round. And I'll be going to Balham against Royston to have a little look at that. Balham, obviously, step five, but have had a sensational rise recently, taking on Royston, who are step three and going very well too. And then, as usual, all the normal National League tables, results, reports, etc.
Well, it's certainly worth getting up for on a Sunday morning, that's for sure. And but make sure you do pick up your copy of the non-league paper or organise your online subscription or digital subscription. David, as ever, it's a pleasure been talking to you. Have a great weekend and we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks very much, Tim. Thanks for having us on.
So that's it for this week. A big thank you to Caroline Barker for joining me and now leaving me.
Do you know, pleasure is mine. Always. And I'm walking out the door because we've got a National League board meeting tomorrow and Thursday. I've got to go and read the board notes. I've got to go. See, this is what happens, right? I'm only able to go to half the meeting tomorrow because I've got to work elsewhere. But actually, three quarters of the meeting is the half that I'm in, even though I've just said there's a half and three quarters and I should be put down. But I'd like people to know, even though I can't vote and I am independent, they do listen to me. And if there is ever anything wants to tell me about how they feel their club's being run, anything they're frustrated about with clubs in the National League or anywhere else, it's treated in confidence. My direct messages are always open on social media and I would love to hear from people. But I'm going to go through those notes. And what I do is I go through, have a look at all the issues, anything that's going on. I go through all the club social media, see what the fans are saying about that particular issue. And I do try and do it forensically on the club website, see what local papers are saying. So it takes a lot of effort to make sure, fully appraise the situation before we walk into the board meeting. I'm not complaining, it's exactly how it should be, but I do want people to know that there are people batting for them. Yeah, in all levels of the, you do the same at...
I did. People should understand that every month normally there's a board meeting.
Yep.
It's a day of your life.
Yeah,
that you're giving up for your love of the game and progressing it. And yeah, you're not there for the glory. You're there to just try and make things better for everybody. And again, the only reason anybody in that boardroom is there because they were a fan of one of the clubs.
Yeah, but I do think it's important to stress because I see the stuff thrown at the EFL. Can't talk for the EFL. Never sat in an EFL board meeting, but I do know there is a forensic approach at the National League level. I'm sure you'd say the same about when you're in the Isthmian League. There is that constant appraisal of all the clubs and they have their eyes open and they are listening to stuff. Sometimes there's stuff you just can't, within the realms of the law, deal with, but they are, within their means, trying their best.
And also having been on boards and bodies, trusts, and they are some of the most organised boards and bodies and board meetings that I've ever been to.
They make Phil Annette's look disorganised.
And on that note, I say a big thank you to all of our guests, including Phil Annette, who's now looking for extra facts and organising himself. A big thank you to everybody that listens. Don't forget you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson can be found on the golf course and also at Dave Anderson 78.
He's Caroline... not on that golf course anymore, is he?
Caroline Barker can be found at Caroline Barker and in board meetings normally or behind a microphone. And myself at Tim Fuhr, and I can be found in a bar if you want to come find me. Plus, you can, of course, find us every week on Audio Boom, on iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, some other places as well. There's a new little thing with the images that you can find us. All good podcast aggregation sites and everywhere else. Not bus stops yet. I was talking somewhere about smart bus stops. That's another conversation. Yeah, probably. Thank you and goodbye. Now, I'm nothing if not fair, and I think we've had a bit of a jest at Mr. Anderson being on the golf course today and not being able to make the recording, but he was working hard. He was working hard with one of the National League's newest managers, who's well-known to non-league. So here's a little piece that Dave Anderson sent me from the golf course, well, I think probably more from the clubhouse, interviewing Sutton United's manager, Matt Gray.
Okay, so sorry, it's Dave here. Can't make the show tonight, but I'm on a very good cause. I'm at a golf club for the Captain's Charity Day, which is a charity that's against, it's about servicemen, ex-servicemen who have been injured in war. So we've had a great day, but I've managed to drag the Sutton manager, who's 11 games into his season and probably 11 pints into his day, but we'll see how it goes. But yeah, obviously Matt Gray, first of all, thanks for coming and supporting today. Enjoyed it?
Yep, enjoyed the company, Dave, but I only enjoyed the golf. I was not at my best today.
Yeah,
big fella. Yeah, you won a prize in the round.
You know, so yeah, so when you try and do these interviews in situations like that, you always get something.
Right,
you know? But so get into your season. We're now 11 games in. So in all seriousness, if you were doing your school report, and I was saying you're 11 games in, what would the school report say so far?
With a new squad, there's certainly things we need to look to improve on. So, you know, I think any of the teams in the division could say that they've got stuff to work on. We've been very good away from home. Only one defeat on the road out of six games. So we've had some good performances, good results away. But yet to get that home win. We were a lot better in our last game against Notts County. And disappointing we didn't go 2-0 up before half time. But I think that first home win and getting another win pretty soon, and we'll get back up that table.
And, you know, and when you go into it after, like, it would have to be said, like, quite a long apprenticeship as an assistant manager, if you want. I know you've filled in as a temporary manager and a interim manager and stuff that it's called these days. What's the big difference? Well, let's talk about match day more than training, because training is training. What's your big differences on match day as a gaffer as opposed to a number two or one of the coaches?
You probably have a lot more time as a manager on a match day. When I was assistant, I've been assistant for 12 years, four different clubs. You feel, you know, you're in the dressing room with the lads, especially obviously doing the set pieces before you go out for your warm-up. You're really hands-on with the players and the information to then go out for the warm-up, and you can sort of burn your energy off, if you like, and get involved in that. Whereas a manager, you sort of do your little chat at half one, which is very, very brief, because you've covered what you wanted to cover in the training sessions leading up to the game. So it's more just a few reminders. You then obviously wait until 2 o'clock to get their team sheet, then you maybe have a little chat there just to confirm their team, confirm their shape, etc. Then you've got another long wait while they go out for a warm-up before you come in and probably say your last few bits before you go out at 3 o'clock. So it's a lot less really than probably an assistant does.
Yeah, and are you a different character as a manager than you were as an assistant? And I don't mean that stupidly. I mean, you know, I've watched people be the loudest assistants and the quietest managers. I've also seen them be vice versa, you know. Has your character changed from the assistant to the manager? How, you know, how are you in the dugout? Say how you were as an assistant.
Yeah, I think as an assistant, I always played quite a good role of being the link between the manager and the players and wanting to have a laugh and a joke with the players at the right times. I still want to do that now. I'm still myself. I've been myself as an assistant and been myself as a manager. But I just felt you're probably not in the dressing room as much as you were when you're an assistant. You know, you do detach yourself away from it a little bit more. So you do, you know, spend a little bit more time in your office, probably because you've got more things to deal with away from actually the dressing room, you know. So you have other stuff to do throughout the day. In terms of being in the technical area, no, I'd say I'm pretty similar to what I was before. You're now just getting fed the information off your assistant. You've got to try and process that a little bit more and make the final decision.
And actually listen to him because exactly. You know what that deal is.
Yeah, exactly. So me and Jason Goodliff, my assistant Mickey Stevens, will get on great, the three of us. So, but I certainly talk to him differently during the 90 minutes than I do when we're sitting in the office.
Yeah, I don't think there's not much changes there for most managers.
Yeah, so what do you think about that? No.
But also, like, things like team selection. You know, you're 3 or 4 days a week now. So, you know, when you're proper part time, you get to name the team Saturdays mostly. And now you're sort of 3 to 4 days a week. Do you name your team before Saturday, or is a match day situation for you?
I've mixed it up really, depending on a few circumstances. I have named the team on a Friday, so we can work out the work on the shape, with and without the ball, and our set pieces. And other times, I've sort of left it till the Saturday to keep them guessing a little bit. And there might be other things, you know, the team might sort of pick itself because we might have injuries and suspensions, etc. You might want to get that work into them on a Friday, or you might want to leave it and keep surprised. So I'm a little bit, I've mixed it up in the 11 games, and no, I don't see there's really a right or wrong. It's just what you get from the feel for that game coming up.
Well, I think we'll leave it there for two people who've had a couple of beers. I think it's been reasonable. Tim, you've got an eye at it and put it into some sort of shape. But listen, thanks for your time, big man. Thanks for coming. We'll get you in the studio in the next few weeks, and Kaz will be there, and we'll have another catch-up. But cheers.
Brilliant. Cheers, Dave.
Jabber Production, JIBBA, JABBA.